Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners, we have a little surprise for you this week. We are gifting you a bonus episode, and this is the episode that we have dropped in our Patreon last week so that you can kind of get a taste of what you might be missing out and decide if you want to join if you have not joined the Patreon. Now, you can join the Patreon at three different levels to support our work. For $1 a month, you get good karma and warm fuzzies because you get to help us defend innocent defendants pro bono. Legal and investigative services cost tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it would be such a prohibitive cost to the defendants who need it the most. So thanks to your support, at just $1 a month, you can help us to continue to do our work for years. You can also join at $5 a month and be an ally. For that, you get our normal episodes, but ad-free. Of course, you get your warm fuzzies and good karma. You also get the bonus episode, like the one we're dropping today, and you get to join that bonus episode recording live. So you get to see me and Colin live while we are doing our thing. The final tier, the highest tier that you can join us at, is $20 a month. And for that, you get everything else that I've mentioned, but also you get to do a monthly true crime Zoom with me and a whole group of other diehards. That's the level we call them, is the diehards. And it's a great discussion every month that you can join. So enjoy this month's bonus episode. It's the only time we're going to be dropping it in our regular feed. And if you want to continue to find our bonus episodes, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/undisclosedpod and sign up at the $5 a month level. And once again, thank you guys for all of your support. Hi, and welcome back to Undisclosed Toward Justice. Today, Colin and I are doing a bonus episode, and this is because there has been a season finale that aired of the HBO documentary of the case against Adnan Syed, which I think the season finale just dropped, what, a couple weeks ago, right, Colin?
Yeah, just a few weeks ago, we had episode 5, catching everyone up with the developments and everything that happened with the Conviction Integrity Unit and the overturning of the reversal and Juvenile Restoration Act.
Yeah. I mean, we did talk about some of this stuff when we relaunched Undisclosed and in our those first 6 episodes earlier this year. But there's stuff that we didn't get into because we kind of didn't want to spoil it because we knew that the documentary was coming out. And, you know, there's obviously footage in there that I think a lot of people are going to be seeing for the first time, like Adnan coming home and seeing his family. Mm. And if you haven't watched it and you have HBO, it's on HBO Max in the US, stop, go watch it and then come back to our discussion. But if you don't have access to it, then you can just listen along. But I did want to give our listeners a little bit of background about the production of this episode. Now, I mean, if you look at the credits, I'm an executive producer on this show, which means very little in terms of actually creating the show or the series. What it means is that my book, which was Adnan's story, I mean, that's what it was called, was optioned, right, to make a documentary. And so when you have a book optioned, you kind of automatically become an executive producer and, you know, you have a little bit of input. But the season finale was almost fully produced about 2 years ago. Because, look, this September, this is going to air. By the time this airs, it's going to be October, I think. I don't know. Look, first week of October. But it'll be 3 years now since Adnan has gotten out of prison and he's been home. And, you know, that was a big part of the, obviously, the series finale is HBO wanted to show, I mean, you know, you can't put a bigger ribbon and on a case like this than tying it up with the defendant coming home, footage of that. So when they got the heads up that it was likely about a year before, like that, you know, this Marilyn Mosby's team was taking his innocence factors very seriously, HBO was like, you know what, we should capture this. And they commissioned a 5th episode where originally, they had no intention of doing a 5-episode series. And then by the following year, it was ready to go. And I had seen it back then. I had seen it a couple years ago. However, the reason it wasn't released was because of the ongoing appeal that Haman Lee's family just, you know, had going. And Adnan's attorney felt like it was just, she didn't want to rock the boat. She didn't want it to be kind of politically uncomfortable. Because, you know, there was a new sheriff in town. Ivan Bates was the new prosecutor. This episode features heavily the work of Marilyn Mosby and her team. There's all kinds of weird considerations and some other strange stuff that was happening behind the scenes that I'll talk about later today. But Anyhow, it has been released now because they have finally wrapped up with Adnan's case and it's kind of over. Having said that, they did have to cut out some of the scenes because they updated it with some of the latest developments that just happened in 2025. And I remember one scene in particular that was in the original cut, where my mom was also home at Adnan's house when he got home and she was actually in it. And she's been cut out, which is kind of bittersweet because as many of our listeners know, at least those who are on my Facebook and our Facebook group, my mom passed away a few weeks ago. And I was hoping to see her again on my TV. And when I realized it was cut out, I was a little bit sad about that. So anyway, all right, let's start off with how about some general impressions, Colin? Because it was the first time you got to see it, right?
Yeah. I mean, for me, what the episode really underscores is how important framing can be and particular language that we use.
That's interesting.
Which is to say, going back to the Serial podcast, right, in 2014, we're introduced to Mr. S.
Yeah.
And the impression that listeners get is, oh, look, this harmless streaker.
Yeah.
Who likes to urinate in public.
Right.
And isn't it odd he came upon this body and is the one to have found Haman Liddy in Linkin Park? And I think that anyone who just listened to Serial, that's the impression you have, this harmless streaker who came upon the body. And in this episode, we finally see a face being put to that name being Alonzo Sellers. And when you hear the accounting of this postal worker who was attacked in her vehicle, and we learn about the newspaper clippings from 1999... you see a completely different picture, which is exactly the point of what Becky and Marilyn and her team are looking into about how dangerous this person was as a possible suspect, in addition to where Hayes' car was found in that area behind the brownstone where his relative lived.
Yeah. I feel like the last decade, Colin, has been largely us trying to undo and correct a lot of the impressions that Serial left. And it's been a struggle because I don't even know what astronomical number they have reached in terms of their downloads. But we probably will never hit that audience. And to this day, I consistently meet people who say, oh, I've been following the case because I listened to Serial. And I think that that's not you following the case. You just listen to Serial. You don't have no idea what's actually happening. But you're so right. Because when I think back about how Sellers was portrayed in Serial, he was portrayed completely harmless. And it was kind of funny. He was kind of funny because he's like wagging his junk in front of a female police officer and she's chasing him around. And you know, it's harmless enough that guess what? He actually never goes to prison for any of it. He doesn't get any time for it. And I don't even know if it appears if he's actually charged with anything for any of those offenses. But he certainly doesn't do a single day in jail for it or prison for it. And we've talked about that. So let's talk specifically because I don't think we went into detail about this entire incident in our first X episode. So if you want to like kind of set the, for folks who have not seen the documentary, and by the way, if you do watch this series finale, they don't linger on it way too much. Maybe it's like, I don't know, 5-6 minutes of it, but it's kind of really important. So yeah. You want to lay out the facts, Colin?
Well, I think the first thing they show, which I think is also important, is they have video from the trial where Alonzo Sellers is very combative.
Yeah.
Angry and adversarial. And I say that's important because a lot of people look at this and say he failed the first lie detector test. He passed the second one, which was improper. And that's part of what the team got into. But when a lot of people look at polygraph and they say lie detector has no relevance because we can't tell if a person's lying or not, what it seems like they picked up in that first polygraph, I think, is that he was agitated and combative, which was shown in his testimony
trial. He was defensive.
Right.
Yeah.
And if he's just the person who found the body, he has no reason to be that way. So I think that was sort of a big key thing to see the video footage of trial to show that. But beyond that, there's this reporting, which I think it was 2020 maybe, when this happened.
Yeah, May of 2020, yeah.
When you had a female postal worker and she's driving in a remote area and this naked man, Alonzo Sellers, comes up and is banging on her postal vehicle and is trying to get inside and this completely freaks her out. And it turns out this is Alonzo Sellers, and a search of his house uncovers he has these newspaper clippings from 1999 and possibly 2000 as well, which is when Hay is abducted, the trial, etc.
I'm going to add a little more flavor to the whole story because as this was unfolding, I was getting reporting about it as soon as this, you know, I mean, I think it was on Erica's, and Erica Souter is Adnan's attorney, on her radar first, because she learned that he had been, you know, charged with something and there was a hearing coming up. I mean, basically, it was kind of unfolding in real time, but the story, this is what happened. There's a postal worker and she's in a residential neighborhood. This is the middle of the afternoon. Okay. We're not talking. I mean, you know, it's when people deliver the mail. It's a cul-de-sac. Okay. And she's on the phone with her supervisor. And as she's talking to her supervisor, this black male steps out from behind like a bush or something, again, in a residential neighborhood, with a black underwear, a pair of black, like underwear over his head. And there's a picture of it, by the way, in the documentary, black underwear over his head. And he's holding it just gives me the creep saying he's holding a pink child, little girl's jacket. It's like one of those shiny little pink. It's like, first of all, where'd you get that jacket, dude?
Right.
But what happens is she's talking to the supervisor and she's like, you are not going to believe what I'm seeing. And the supervisor's like, oh, hang up and get a picture or video. Like, you know, like get some evidence of what you're seeing. So she does that. And once she starts like holding up her phone, I don't know if she gets a video. There's definitely a photograph because I have the photograph somewhere. That's when he starts charging at her. Now, you know, these mail trucks, they're like open on one side, right?
Yeah.
Like, and so he jumps onto the side of this mail. And she, in the meantime, is like just hits the accelerator and is trying to shake him off. And she said what was the most terrifying thing was that he didn't make a sound. He did not make a sound, but he was reaching in and trying to grab her phone and like throwing punches and stuff. But he wanted to get that phone away from her. And she was able, I don't know, it was like when she took the turn around the cul-de-sac, whatever, he kind of fell off. You know what I mean? Like she lost him.
Yeah.
She was totally panicked. She drives a little further away and she sees like there's like a, I don't know, like a cable service truck or somebody in like a driveway, right? And she pulls into there and she's like, panicked and scared, and she's like, this just happened to me, I don't know if this guy's following me. And the guy's like, okay, let's call the police, let's do something. Now as they're doing this, not too long later, like a few minutes later, this black truck rolls up and is standing outside the driveway, and the window goes down, and it's Alonzo Sellers, and he's looking at her now. Now they, both of these people, see the truck, they get the license plate number, and when the police come, they tell them this is who the guy is. Well, guess what? The police find Alonzo still in the neighborhood. He's still lingering in the neighborhood. There's a lot more.
He hasn't given up.
Yeah. There's a lot more information that, like I said, like they cut it back in the documentary. There wasn't a whole lot lingering, but the story is crazy. They stop Alonzo Sellers. Okay. And they say, was this you? And he's like, no, this was not me. I don't know who she's talking about. I was not the naked man with the underwear over my head. I was just on my way either from or to Home Depot or Lowe's or one of these things, except he's in a residential neighborhood. He's not like on a street that would lead to a store. Now, what happens next, and this is important because of what happens at the hearing as well, and also just this big whole world of who is Alonzo Sellers to the Baltimore police, right?
Yeah.
Is that they tell this postal worker they're going to come to her house to interview her, okay? They come to her house and they show her a picture and they're like, was this the man who you think assaulted you? And you know who they showed her a picture of? It was her own son. She's like, what are you talking about?
Wow. Yeah.
She's like, why would you show me a picture of my son? I told you who it is. I gave you the license plate number.
Yeah.
I identified, like, look, his face obviously was covered, right? Because he had the underwear, the perp, whoever this was. But then Alonzo Sellers rolls up. You know what I mean? Anyhow, she had to convince these officers, like, because she almost felt threatened. She's like, are you threatening to charge my son with it? Like, the whole thing was wild. That's a very crazy aspect of the story that nobody understands. Okay. So then she's like, no, it was that guy. It was definitely that guy. So then they get this warrant to search his house. Now, he lives in Woodlawn, and there's a basement. The basement is a man cave. And the police report from that search shows that the basement is just, you know, littered like a man cave. It's got like liquor bottles and beer bottles and like, you know, dirty magazines and all kinds of stuff. But under the sofa, they find a bunch of newspaper clippings from 1999. What is infuriating and frustrating is that the police report does not specify what those newspaper clippings were about. Were they about the, I don't know,
Orioles.
The Orioles that year? Were they about the, I don't even know. I mean, like, it's so infuriating. And what happened was Amy Berg, the documentary filmmaker, and Erica both talked to that police officer later and was like, what were the clippings about? And he's like, I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't believe that, Colin. I personally don't believe that. And okay. Then let's fast forward to the hearing. So he gets charged and he pled to a second-degree assault. But here's a couple of odd things about the hearing. One that was brought up in the documentary and one thing that was not. The first was that the prosecutor, not the defense attorney, but the prosecutor says to the judge, Your Honor, the defendant is Alonzo Sellers, who, by the way, was a witness in the Adnan Syed case.
Yeah, gratuitously.
What do you make of that?
I honestly don't know why they felt the need to bring that up. I don't know if they were trying to notify the judge, thought this was significant in some way. Maybe trying to indicate that maybe he was the person who killed Haman Lee and therefore Sellers should be treated more harshly.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't consider that. I considered the opposite. I'm like, what kind of code signal was that? To say, hey, let's treat him with kid gloves. Because the other really odd thing that happened at the hearing, which was not covered in the documentary, was that the prosecutor requested to the judge. And I've never seen this happen before. The prosecutor asked the judge, we are asking you, Your Honor, that we're asking the court not to require the defendant to wear an ankle monitor.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, that's a baffling decision, given what we know about. I mean, what he did to the postal worker, but as you say, having the children's clothing, I mean, that's...
Oh, and that whole thing just disappeared. Nobody has any idea what that was. There's no information in the report about where he got it. He has no children in his home. Was he wandering around in people's backyards? Because he did emerge from like behind a house type of thing. And then there's some woods. By the way, where he was 2 miles from Woodlawn High School, for the record.
And this was a big part of the motion to vacate, right? Was that they had failed to properly clear Alonzo Sellers back in 1999 by giving this defective second polygraph after he failed the first one. And that's kind of lost in the shuffle because a lot of Bates's motion to withdraw is about the legalities and whether there was a Brady violation in connection with the threats. But it sort of ignores the other thrust of Becky's investigation, which is simply, look, this is a factual matter of who's guilty. You didn't properly clear this guy, and there's a ton of evidence, including where Hayes' car was found. Why not investigate this and see, you know, DNA testing, et cetera, to see if this guy committed the crime?
Yeah, and Hayes' car, where it was found, turns out to be... It's like right in front of the house of Alonzo's cousin or something. I mean, like, it's not...
The closest house.
Right. The closest house to her car was Alonzo's cousin. Not only did they, you know, he failed the first polygraph and they gave him a second one to clear him, but also, you know, Susan Simpson appears in this and is talking about those skin cells on the liquor bottle. And Susan Zoe has been very, very honed in on those skin cells because there were epithelial cells found on the liquor bottle close to Hayes' body that were never DNA tested, as far as I remember. And no samples were ever taken from Alonzo Sellers. There's never been a hair sample, DNA sample, nothing. And nothing would exist in CODIS because the man has never been, has gone to prison or been processed for anything. Even in this, he got a suspended sentence. That's it. And this is after, like, his record goes back for decades. This is not like, you know what I mean? And so, and a black man in Baltimore, look, I just don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
So this is how the episode starts off, with all of this crazy stuff around Sellers. And Sellers is still out there, just a couple miles away from the high school, probably still running around naked. But I do want to know what's happened to that pink jacket. And nobody knows, I mean, what happened to that. I'm assuming they didn't find it in that basement. But I'm not going to lie to you or our listeners when I say there are times when I'm like, I'm just going to break into that basement and go under that sofa. Because if those clippings
are still there.
Now, look. If he has clippings about, like, let's say, the trial doesn't happen for another year, by the way. So he doesn't testify till the next year. But these are clippings from 99, which would be about the murder and the crime and, you know, like the arrest, maybe Adnan's arrest, right? That's what happened. Would it be weird for a witness to keep those for 25 years?
I mean, I would certainly think so. Absolutely.
Hidden under his sofa.
Yeah, that part of it. It's not... You know, a keepsake.
Right.
A little book of my memories of as I was a witness in this case. It's under the sofa.
It's not in a scrapbook.
Yeah.
That's very serial killer behavior. All right. Let's see. Another thing we see, I mean, most of the episode, I would divide it into three. There's like the Alonzo stuff. Then there is like the whole process of how and why Adnan eventually got his freedom. And it shows that Becky Feldman, who we had on the show, she was in charge of the investigation. Marilyn Mosby was under a lot of pressure because she was federally indicted four months before the election for the DA or state's attorney's office election. She was up against Ivan Bates, pretty much. And, you know, she lost it, you know. And they talk about the indictment in the show as well. Not into the details, but just the fact that it exists. And then she says to Becky, she's like, I got 4 months to get as much done as I can. So we need to, like, you know, like speed this up. They filed a joint DNA motion. Right. So they really wanted, you know, Marilyn Mosby, and I don't think Adnan's case was, I mean, Becky was handling Adnan's case. And Mosby was supervising probably lots of different things that were going on at the time. But she knew she was running out of time and she needed to get as much done. And she also didn't know what would happen to this particular case once Ivan Bates got into office, which I remember at the time thinking, well, I mean, Ivan Bates would just carry this on. And I feel like, oh, I was totally wrong about that. Now, I want to talk about something that I didn't mention before, because I don't know, it kind of didn't fit into our earlier series. But right now, it kind of does. And it goes to what was happening at the time. So you do hear in the episode, for example, Marilyn Mosby calling Amy, right, the director, and saying, by the way, we're filing this. If you want to get cameras down here, get them down here. Marilyn knew. She had been interviewed. She knows there's a series. I mean, the series was out years ago. Ivan Bates has been on the series. It's not like anybody connected to this case has not been in the media or on the series. Everybody has, pretty much. And around this time, in the months leading up to the September 19th hearing on the motion to vacate, which is the day Adnan came home, I started getting these weird messages, and I want to explain a little bit about these weird dynamics. So you have Ivan Bates versus Marilyn Mosby, right? Like, now Ivan Bates had worked on the Keith Davis Jr. case for a number of years, right? And Colin, you had also worked on it. We did a series on it. We knew that Marilyn Mosby, we feel, was on the wrong side of that case, because she was on the wrong side of that case. Keith Davis Jr.'s wife, Kelly, I'm just going to use her first name. Kelly was somebody that I had been connected to for a number of years. You know, as we were covering the case, she would show up to events we were doing for Adnan. She was very supportive. Kelly was going to law school. She's like, I am getting in the system and I'm going to fix this. But Kelly would also show up at events where Marilyn Mosby was. And you can find this online. And she would just cuss at her and humiliate her and like just attack her publicly, like in a way that, like, look, I have my issues with the prosecutors, but I have never done that to Theo Vigna-Roger. You know, I mean, like, obviously you got to have your limits. But it was a very, very public battle between those two. And I wanted to say to Kelly, the more you do this, the more she's going to dig in. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying she's doing the right thing. She might not have ever done the right thing on it. But it's certainly, this is not going to help, is how I felt. And that's why I don't agree with that, with doing. Anyhow, she went really hard after Mosby. Okay. But then Mosby files this joint motion for Adnan. And suddenly the world knows that, oh, hey, Marilyn Mosby seems to think that Adnan is innocent and wants to help either release him or exonerate him. And Kelly turned against me. And I started getting really ugly private messages from Kelly, which were shocking given the fact that we had each other's back. And she's very active with like Baltimore activists. Baltimore Block is an activist group. And I just started getting messages from her and others attacking me for being like Mosby's like lapdog or something. And they specifically alleged that I had made a deal with Marilyn Mosby, that we would feature her in the documentary and make her a national hero if she released Adnan. And I was like, I have never spoken to Marilyn Mosby or Becky Feldman. I didn't even know what Becky looked like until the day of the hearing.
Yeah.
I was like, I have never had any connection to them. And this has been going on for a year. The investigation had been going on for the year prior. And I was like horrified. And Kelly was so ugly to me, like just DMing me and saying, we're going to take you down. And then I was told by somebody, listen, this whole group of people is pushing, you know, the FBI, there was a federal investigation into Marilyn Mosby. She's got federal eyes on her. So now I was being told that the FBI might come speak to me and want to get access to my communications to see if such a deal had taken place. In fact, I was like, I have never communicated with her ever. So go for it. I mean, like my Twitter DMs are there, my Instagram DMs, my emails, all there. Like, you know, even if I deleted something, there'd be a trace, but I have nothing to hide was my response to that. I'm like, bring it. I got nothing to hide. I don't even know the woman. All this is happening in the background as, you know, the case is moving forward in the Baltimore City. And, you know, as far as I was concerned, you know, Adnan was the 13th defendant for Marilyn Mosby to have exonerated in her tenure. And I was just looking at that part of it. And I, with the exception of the Keith Davis thing, it's awful. And I don't think she was on the right side of that. But she was on the right side for 13 other people, right? And I feel like somebody like that you can work with. And I deeply appreciated what she had done in the space that we work in. So I'm not going, they wanted me to attack Mosby publicly. Okay. I'm like, why the hell would I do that? Like, none of that makes sense. And, you know, and I was like, behind the scenes, I'm supporting Ivan Bates anyways. Right. Like, because we really, I felt like Ivan was the right person for this job. I felt like he was really principled. Well, that all backfired. And I am ashamed that I didn't realize what a politician he is. And I read him wrong. And right now I'm going to say, I have been in communication with Marilyn Mosby after Adnan was released much later. Like when she was going to court on her matter, I think I sent her a message wishing her well. She has two young daughters. She also got divorced, so she's a single mom. And I was just wishing her well. I still wish her well. And I told her she should run for state's attorney again. Okay.
Which is funny. You know, from my perspective, there are quotes out there in the media by myself saying that Keith Davis Jr. is the most prosecuted man in American history, tied with Curtis Flowers in the dark. I worked with two other attorneys on the vindictive prosecution motion for Keith Davis Jr. and Ivan Bates in dropping the charges cited the court's finding of vindictiveness.
Yeah.
And so, you know, then when I'm supporting the motion to vacate and what Mosby's office is doing, not as much as you by any extent, but I got a ton of pushback of why are you carrying water for Mosby and she's so corrupt? And I said, look at my record.
Yeah.
When I thought she was wrong in the Keith Davis Jr. case, I attacked her in the press. I filed a motion, not myself, but with a team of vindictiveness. When I think she's doing the right thing here, I'm in support because I think this was a wrongful conviction. And the problem, which you get to, Robbie, is it is this battle between Mosby and Bates, and there's such bad blood between the two of them and the entire surrounding environment in Baltimore that Adnan just gets caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, look, of course, there's the political battle, but I wonder also, like on a matter of principle, if Keith Davis Jr. was also that battle, right? It was Ivan versus Mosby on that issue as well.
Yeah.
And all of, you know, Baltimore activists and advocates and justice workers against Mosby on that issue, too. But you carrying water for Mosby, you're carrying water for Adnan, and so am I. And I don't care who it is who did the right thing. And even in the documentary, Anand's like, this is the first person from the state to actually listen to us. Like, we've never, you know, and the documentary shows me and Anand's mom meeting with Mosby on the morning of the hearing. That was the first time in my life I ever met her or spoken to her. And Anand's mom saying, thank you. This couldn't have happened without you. And, you know, I mean, I've always believed that, you know, having the right person in office makes all the difference in a lot of these cases. But, you know, what was awful about the whole thing and this that day, it unfolded like it was almost like deja vu because I had envisioned it so many times, trying to manifest it probably. I had envisioned it so many times. But when we came out and they had like the little press, you know, pits there and Mosby was speaking there. You know, of course what Mosby wants, because every time she's done this, she's had the defendant next to her when she exonerates a defendant, right? She wanted Adnan next to her. She wanted Erica next to her. But because of all of this political ugliness, Erica wouldn't allow it. Erica just got Adnan and got him straight into the car. And I thought that was a shame. I thought Adnan and Erica, and I honestly, to this day, I'm like, you guys should have done better by Mosby. That was the least you could have done, given all the shit she's being put through. I mean, because she's also facing accusations of corruption on top of everything else. That this was the whole thing was a corrupt move to just be on the documentary.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
The other thing, though, too, I think, which bears pointing out, is that it's not really Mosby against Bates. Mm. If you look at any conviction integrity unit or any prosecutor's office that's investigating wrongful convictions, it is not the state's attorney that is doing the groundwork and putting in the hours. That was Becky Feldman. Yeah. And you might think that Mosby had a bit of a hand in what Becky was doing, but this was Becky doing hour upon hour of investigation and coming to her conclusion. It's really Becky Feldman against Ivan Bates. And yeah, Marilyn Mosby runs the office at the time, but she's not the one on the ground doing this, you know, brass tacks investigation into whether it's wrongful conviction.
Oh, she isn't.
That doesn't happen.
And the thing is, like, Ivan, and we talked about this, Ivan is now coming after both Becky and Mosby and trying to get them, make them lose their licenses, like get them disbarred for their work in this specific case. And I just think that level of petty is unbelievable. At the end of this day, it should be about the facts of Adnan's case. That's the only thing it should be about, not about the politics of who you like, who you don't like, and I'm going to undo the thing. I mean, it just feels so Trumpian to me where, like, I'm just going to come in and undo everything that my predecessor did without any consideration of to the merits of that, whatever, that policy or that whatever it was. I just out of political spite, and that's what it is. Somebody messaged me and said that after the finale aired, Ivan Bates did tweet something about it and tagged the prosecutors in it, but I didn't see it. Did you see it?
Yeah, he tagged me as well, and I had...
Oh, my God.
I did a response. It was like a five-minute video about why they withdrew from the motion to vacate, and it didn't answer critical questions.
He had a five-minute video prepared in response to this?
Yeah, he said a couple days before the HBO episode aired, he was going to post this response, and he did it on Twitter.
What was the gist of the video? Just the same stuff in the motion?
Yeah, I mean, it's just repeated what was in the motion, but it didn't answer the question. So in other words, Kevin Urich says, the person who called said...
It was Adnan
who made the threats against Tay. And then his point is to say, we spoke to the source, and we discussed this earlier, is the source the wife or the attorney? But in other words, he then reports, well, the source says, in my presence or in front of me, I don't remember Bilal making any threats. Which still leaves the question, what did you tell Urich? Because unless you told Urich that Adnan made this threat, Unless Yurik is just horribly mistaken, someone did call him and say he said he'd make her disappear, he would kill her. And unless that was Adnan, that is still Brady material.
It is, because, and the other thing is, if it was Adnan, that person would have been a witness.
Well, that too, yes. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yurik is not going to be like, thank you so much for that information, bye-bye. I'm just going
to
write that
down. And it is, Bates' point is, you know, just talking to Yurik wasn't enough. We talked to this, he calls it the superstar witness. Well, did the superstar witness say that they told Yurik that Adnan made these threats? Because if not, someone did make these statements to Yurik, and if it's not Adnan, it's still Brady material. That's my position.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a big bulk of the episode, and the rest of it is basically Adnan returning to his childhood home, returning to the home from where he was arrested, going back to his bedroom, raiding the fridge immediately, reuniting with his father, who also, it's really bittersweet to see uncle and, like, you know, my mom's scene got cut, but, you know, those are people who were with us a couple years ago, no longer with us. And also, there is a little clip of my dad seeing Adnan come home. And that was after my dad's final stroke. And he was in my home and Adnan walked into the house. And my father looked at him. And my dad, you can tell how astonished he looks. He's just like, what? So, and he knew who that was. And he hadn't seen Adnan in a long, long time. So, you know, those are all, it was just watching that. Like those, it was an incredible period of time. September 2022 was an incredible period of time because of all these amazing things happening. And it shows Adnan how he's working for the for Georgetown University at the Prison Justice Initiative, and that's kind of it. I don't know if there's any. Is there anything else you want to address from the episode?
I think it was really interesting to hear Adnan speaking to this kind of fellowship of prisoners that he met on the inside, and you hear some of them after he is released, and they're speaking to how empathetic he was and how much he helped them out. And, you know, Adnan saying, I love my new life on the outside, but I miss, you know, seeing all my friends there from prison since we came in as teenagers back in the late 20th century. We've been there and had this routine and all that. And it's kind of interesting. And it shows, you know, in that sense, as you mentioned with Georgetown, Adnan is very much an outlier in a good way for him. In other words, he speaks to those same routines and customs in prison that can make it so tough for someone on the outside to adjust and find gainful employment and have that support system, which Adnan luckily has, both from a familial and a professional perspective. So it was nice to see that and how it's worked out for Adnan. But then you think about so many other people who are institutionalized after decades in prison for wrongful conviction, and how tough it is for them to reacclimate in so many circumstances.
It is. I mean, and reentry is some of the work that he works on as well. That program does a lot of reentry work. And it's a big struggle for a lot of folks. And, you know, they did have, I think they had three different people interviewed briefly at the very end who were incarcerated with Adnan. They, I think a couple were exonerated and a couple had just served their sentence and maybe were resentenced. But all of those men came out during Mosby's tenure. So her office was part of that process for them to be home, and all of them very much support Mosby. But I remember, you know, I was so far behind Adnan when he came out of the courthouse. I was just getting caught in the melee, but I made a point to go and stand behind Mosby at the podium. And so did Adnan's mom and brother, because we wanted to show how thankful we were. He got whisked off, but when I watched footage of it, like later in the day, you know, there were so many people, you know, on social media showing, and there was video of us emerging. Adnan's face is pretty neutral, except for one brief moment right before he gets into the car, where he looks up and he flashes a smile and he throws up a victory, peace or victory sign. And he's doing that because of those guys. He sees those three men who were, I think there were more than, actually there's a bunch of them at the courthouse, but he sees that group of his brothers that he had been incarcerated with on the other side of the street, and they're all waving. And that's the only time he smiles when he gets out. And that picture is like one of my favorite picture of him with the peace sign and smiling. And he does keep in touch with them. And I've met a number of them. But yeah, it's hard for some. And some of them have had the family support and financial support, because a couple of them even have gotten settlements with the city because of their exonerations, which, by the way, Adnan has not. And he would not be eligible for unless he's actually exonerated. Right. So there's that.
And then there's sort of the connective tissue between Adnan and his case in our current season, which is to say, as you noted, he's now working at Georgetown's Prisons and Justice Initiative, run by Marty Tankliff and Mark Howard. Adnan did his orientation for that job with a woman named Amanda Lewis. Amanda Lewis grew up in Florida. She's a criminologist, and she works for Georgetown. And she and her students worked on the Amanda Lewis case, the other Amanda Lewis, the drowning case, recovering, and they did a Making an Exoneree video. I saw that during the showcase. And so Amanda Lewis, who speaks very highly of Adnan and did her orientation with him, is who I've been working with principally at Georgetown in researching and presenting this current case of Amanda Lewis, also in Florida.
We got to have Amanda Lewis on. And I mean Amanda Lewis at Georgetown, because Amanda Lewis is also the person who introduced me to the case that I'm working on for our next season, for next spring. And I'm not going to say what the case is yet, but it's also another female defendant who's wrongfully convicted. And Amanda brought that case to me as well. And she's a force. She's wonderful. So, all right, I guess that's it for us on our little bonus episode. And we'd love to hear your thoughts, you know, and if you haven't joined the community group yet, please join the Facebook community Toward Justice group. You have to just answer a couple of questions. Don't make me reject your your request to join because you didn't answer the question. It'll take you 30 seconds. And we'd love to have your conversation go on there about this episode. All right, I think that's it for us. And after this, back to the state versus Amanda Lewis. All right, thanks, guys.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners, it's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. As you know, we did something new a few months ago by utilizing SpeakPipe as a way for you guys to leave us voice notes. For anyone new here, you can go to speakpipe.com/undisclosed to leave us your questions or thoughts and comments. Since the response to SpeakPipe has been so amazing, we've got two additional exciting announcements to make. First, we have a new Facebook community group where you can engage with us and one another about all things true crime and criminal justice. Just go to facebook.com/groups/toward justice and answer three simple questions and you're in. In addition to that, we also just relaunched our Patreon page at patreon.com/undisclosedpod. So many folks have already signed up and we can't express our gratitude enough to each and every single one of you. Even a dollar goes a long way and allows us to do the work pro bono for our defendants. Also, I would like to give a quick shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production, as well as Patrick Cortez and Ramiro Marquez for our theme music. To engage with us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. You can find us on TikTok, YouTube, and X at Undisclosed Pod. Whether you're new or a returning listener, you can check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our revamped website at undisclosedpod.com. If you would like to follow Colin and Rabia on social media, you can follow Rabia at RabiaSquared2, the number 2, on Instagram, and Colin at EvidenceProf on Instagram, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for your continued support for us and for supporting our sponsors. Until next time.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills. Accelerate your team's impact. And redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.